Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Trust the Stars by Tricia Goyer. Narrated by Zura Johnson. Prologue. Vatican City, Rome, Italy. 18 October, 1943. Alessandra Appiani walked with a quickened pace toward the front door of the Vatican, her footsteps echoing on the marble floor and the fateful words echoing through her mind. The Nazis have come for you just as you always knew they would. Just beyond the door spread St. Peter's Square, with the ellipse-shaped colonnades topped by a balustrade on which 140 figures of saints stood. Yet not one of those saints could protect her today. In the heart of God's holy city, foreboding filled the air. She'd arrived back just hours ago, thankful to find her four children safe after Italy's surrender to the Allied powers. Yet, her husband Christian, her love, was missing. Summoned to the door to retrieve a telegram, Alessandra guessed the news concerned him.
Dear Lord Jesus, give me the wisdom to follow your ways so that I might serve you and the people you have given me. Guide my steps, strengthen my weary heart. Help me not to fail your call. Use me to give myself just as you gave. May your will rise above my own this moment and every one of my days.
The prayer came naturally to Alessandra, as it had for the last 20 years. It had been her mother, God rest her soul, who had urged the young Alessandra to submit herself entirely to God. While others point to our position as one of honor, you must see yourself as a servant of the people and our Lord, Queen Eliana insisted. Yet today, the prayer meant something different than it had for the last 2 decades. What was the Lord's way amid war? Would she be able to discern it, even in this? Finding the Lord's way guided her daily choices, whether Alessandra was in the Vatican's safety or their city's horrors. She sought to find the good and do the good. On one side, the grandeur of the Vatican itself, with its towering columns and ornate facades, was a testament to the power and majesty of the Catholic Church. On the other side, crowded and chaotic streets filled with the sounds and smells of a city under siege. The Nazi occupation had brought a sense of darkness and fear to Rome. Soldiers patrolled the streets, their boots ringing out on the cobblestones. But despite the fear and uncertainty, there was also a sense of defiance in the air. The people of Rome refused to be cowed by the Nazi presence. They went about their business, determined to live as best they could, or at least that's how many wanted to appear. Alessandra smoothed her hands over the front of her linen blazer, attempting to stride with confident steps.
Remember, act as if you have nothing to hide.
Years ago, even when war was only a rumor, she had attempted to follow the Lord's way. But in these times, it was a daily choice to do anything to make a difference. Just a 30-minute walk from the Vatican was the ghetto of Rome. For 400 years, the four cramped blocks around the Porticus Octavia had been home to Roman Jews. Over the years of the war, Alessandra had traveled there a few times a week. The sick had been tended to, the poor fed. But she soon realized more had to be done when 22 days ago, the leader of the SS and the Gestapo in Rome, Herbert Kappler, demanded that the Jewish community give him 50 kilograms of gold, or 200 families would be deported. And even though the demand had been met, that had done nothing to protect the innocent Jews. As she turned down the last hallway, Moving toward the front entrance, Alessandra's thoughts flashed to the young girl, no older than 4 or 5, who had wrapped her arms around Alessandra's neck so tightly as she picked her up. The girl in her arms had been small and fragile, like a porcelain doll. Her dark hair was matted and her eyes were wide with fear. Alessandra couldn't imagine what she had been through, what horrors she'd witnessed in her young life. All she knew was that this child needed her help, just as the others had before her.
"It will be all right. I will keep you safe. Have you ever wanted to visit the mountains? These mountains are higher than you could ever imagine," Alessandra had soothed in a sing-song voice. Alessandra had pulled Miriam close, a surge of protectiveness and love rushing through her. Yet even as she'd carried the child to the safe house just this morning, it haunted her that she could do nothing for her husband. Rumor had it that Christian was under house arrest in Bavaria. Her heart ached, knowing she and her children were safe, but her husband was not. While conventional wisdom said safety for her was to stay within the protected walls of the Vatican, something deep within Alessandra's gut told her differently. "True safety is walking in your will, my lord. Help my steps not to falter."
If the Lord directed her to leave her security for the sake of her husband's life, there would be no question. Love would compel her. Yet she knew that leaving the Vatican would most likely be walking into a lair of wolves.
"Oh, my lord, keep me strong."
Up ahead, a young priest stood at the door, holding it slightly ajar. Although a young man, worry lines creased Father Marco's face. His dark brown eyes, usually full of warmth and compassion, radiated fear. His lips were thin and downturned. At her approach, they parted slightly as if to prepare to issue a warning. Then, as if steeling himself to face the enemy outside the door, Father Marco straightened. Erect, he set his jaw as if he were made of marble like the floor he stood rooted upon. Even though a warm breeze flowed through the crack, a chill traveled down Alessandra's spine.
"A request has been sent that someone wishes to see me," she attempted to keep her voice firm. Though she'd always considered herself a capable woman, today it took everything she had not to crumble under the weight of worry.
She forced her shoulders back as she paused before the priest. As if just brought to life, the muscles in his face pulsed. His mouth clenched.
"There are 2 Nazis who demand your audience." The priest held the door steady.
Her fingertips touched the hollow of her throat above her jeweled necklace.
2? "It is a soldier and an officer with a message to deliver. I insisted you'd just arrived and were weary from travel. I requested that the officer come back tomorrow, or maybe the day after."
"And he still waits?"
"He states it's urgent, a matter of life and death."
"Does this have to do with Christian?"
Alessandra clasped her hands together at the mention of her husband's name. The highest members of the Nazi party had been trying to put a noose around her husband's neck for months, even though he'd been a faithful party member for over a decade. They now questioned his decisions and motives. And with her brother-in-law's recent death, did they believe Christian played a part in silencing those faithful to the Führer? That she did?
"I do not know if it concerns your husband or not. The Germans did not say."
"Yet still, a matter of life and death."
She narrowed her gaze and nodded toward the door.
"I will speak with them."
"But, Princess..."
His fingers wrapped tighter around the door handle. You are under our protection. You are safe.
And it is not my job to stay safe, is it?
She motioned to him again to open the door. She didn't know what the future held, but she had to have faith. Faith that God would protect her just as he'd protected the young girl she'd passed into another's capable arms. Trust that God would guide her unique journeys. With slow movements, the priest swung open the door, allowing Alessandra to see the Nazi officer before her and the soldier at his side. The officer stood erect, with his hands clasped behind his back.
Can you come with us, princess? This is an urgent matter concerning your husband. Your presence is requested at our local offices.
Instead of answering the officer, Alessandra turned to Father Marco.
Will you tend to my children and tell them I will be away for the rest of the day?
He responded with the slightest of nods. She thought of retrieving her purse, but remembered the special papers sewn in its lining. No, that would never do. Then, hoping to appear as if she had no concerns about the request, she exited the Vatican and set her eyes on the waiting car. The streets around the Vatican were filled with vendors and peddlers, yet few wares were laid out on makeshift tables and blankets. The vendors' journey to the city's center was more ritual than work these days, since there was so little to be had. As the bells of St. Peter's rang across the city, Alessandra knew she stood on the precipice of darkness and light. The work of caring for others, and the silent resistance and rebellion within the walls of the Vatican, had taken her mind off the greater danger to herself and other members of the royal family. Yet, didn't the Nazis happily strike down anyone in power, especially those whose loyalties were questioned by the Nazi elite? Alessandra approached the waiting car, refusing to peer into the eyes of evil lest she crumble. She slid into the back seat of the waiting sedan and folded her trembling hands on her lap. As the engine sparked to life, she refused to look back at the Holy Church, their refuge in times of trouble. Knowing her children would be waiting for her return tonight caused an ache to grow in the pit of her stomach.
Please, God, I do not know if I am strong enough.
She sucked in a shuddering breath and squared her shoulders as she prepared for the biggest test of her life. Alessandra could only hope she had the strength to stay the course, neither crumble nor confess. And as her eyes fluttered closed for the briefest second, one thought gave her peace. She could have faith that another was safe when all seemed lost. Even now, the young girl, Miriam, was in good hands, like the others Alessandra had helped before her. It was now Alessandra's turn to trust that this world's glimmers of light and goodness could hold out, even under the suffocating cover of darkness. Chapter 1. Aloria, present day. Louis Castillo adjusted the lapel of his tuxedo as he peered into the mirror and blew out a low breath. His warped reflection hinted at the mirror's age. Still, one could expect no less from the medieval town of Las Massanas, tucked high in the Pyrenees Mountains. He forced a smile, hoping it was believed. The last thing he desired was the pity of festival goers. Yet they knew, as he did, his heartbreak. What good was being an heir to the throne if one didn't have someone to share life with? Someone to love? Since morning, a crowd had been gathering on the cobblestone outside the window. The aroma of delicious food from the open-air vendors took him back to his youth. As a boy, he'd enjoyed racing up and down the street, stopping at any table and choosing his favorite foods before racing off again. Those times were some of the few when he'd tasted freedom. Years later, that sense of freedom still had a bigger draw than the food. He also knew that he hadn't been as free as he imagined. At every festival of his youth, every vendor had been vetted, and Louis's bodyguard had watched his every move. Yet as a boy, he'd relished the festival days in which he could make his own choices, choose his food, and race around with abandon, as if he weren't the Crown Prince of Aloria. A banner proclaiming the Narciso Yepes International Festival outside the castle window flapped in the breeze. How fitting that Louis would play his violin tonight in honor of the Spanish guitarist, whose most famous song, Romance, was later believed to be an arrangement rather than the guitarist's original work, since published versions of the guitar composition existed before Yepes' birth. Louis also felt very much a fraud when it came to romance, mainly due to the upcoming wedding of Lady Costanza Arauz, the woman he'd hoped to spend his life with, a woman who, in a few days, would marry another. "Not enough prince to catch the princess," one tabloid had read. The sting of those words spread like venom through his heart. Not enough prince. Not enough. The nippy October breeze blew through the open window, urging him to focus on the evening's events. He'd been up half the night planning his escape from this wedding, this continent. If he didn't find a place to breathe, to think, he'd never be able to fulfill his royal duties and host the upcoming grand events. At the turn of the year, an elaborate festival would celebrate his father's Silver Jubilee, marking King Alfonso's 25th year of being the reigning monarch of Aloria. Plans had been in the works for years, and until 6 months ago, Louis had planned to attend with Lady Constance at his side. And now? Louis would face the crowds alone, just as he'd do tonight, hoping his smile wouldn't give away the shards of his broken heart. Louis leaned forward and ran a finger around his collar, wishing he could unbutton the constraints. Then he scowled, noting the sound of footsteps on the tile. His assistant and bodyguard, Sergio, strode into the suite with a single white flower on a silver plate.
"The collar is too tight. Pinching your neck, sir."
Sergio cocked one eyebrow, yet his eyes were fixed on Louis's face, not his shirt collar. Louis let out another hard sigh and closed his eyes.
"Just trying to breathe, Sergio. Just trying to breathe."
He opened them, refusing to look in the face of his bodyguard, who'd become a close friend in the decade of his service. Louis didn't need to see sympathy there.
"I bear a gift from Princess Regina."
Sergio pinched the stem between two fingers and lifted it with a flourish.
"Your boutonniere."
Though 20 years his senior, with gray streaking his temples, there was a humor in the soft wrinkles around his bodyguard's eyes. Louis fixed his gaze. A simple single blossom with a double layer of ruffled petals and a perfect black center. His chest tightened at the sight of it. His aunt still treated him as if he were the darling 8-year-old boy he'd been when she'd decided it was her duty to prepare him for the crown after his mother's untimely death. Ignoring Sergio's teasing glance, Louis nodded to the flower.
"An anemone, of course."
One side of Sergio's lip curled in a smile.
"Your aunt always has perfect taste." Perhaps to match your tuxedo. We both know the anemone hints at hope for a positive turn of events. My dear aunt's compassion is kind but suffocating. Louis fidgeted with his collar again, and then dropped his arms to his sides as his hands curled into soft fists. Sergio nodded and reached for the collar.
Maybe it is too tight. I brought a spare shirt if... This country's too tight, my man.
Louis spoke through clenched teeth. Then he opened his fisted hands and forced them to relax. The last thing Louis needed was the tabloids to pick up on his shortened temper. He hoped none of the press spoke in the language of flowers, like his aunt, and pointed out another reason to pity him.
Are the tickets booked for tomorrow night? Tickets booked, luggage packed. I reserved your room. The only task yet is yours. Have you told her yet?
The creak of the door sounded just as Sergio finished his sentence, and Louis cringed. With the soft shuffle of his aunt's shoes on the stone floor as she entered the room, his heart jumped, as if he'd just been caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
Told me what yet?
Princess Regina Castillo strode into the room in a red velvet gown that trailed the floor. Her gray hair was combed into a neat twist at the base of her neck. She paused, clasping her hands before her, and watched in approval as Sergio pinned the boutonniere to Louis's lapel. Louis smiled and extended a welcome hand in his aunt's direction. After Sergio finished, Louis nodded his approval.
I was hoping to see you before the concert, aunt.
He took three long strides to her, taking her hand in his own.
I dare to say there isn't a woman in Aloria who will rival your beauty.
He lifted her emerald-garnished hand to his lips and placed the lightest kiss upon her paper-thin skin. A hint of a smile touched his aunt's lips.
As my mother used to say, ma se consigue lamiendo che mordiendo. More is achieved by licking than by biting.
You believe I'm trying to win you over with flattery?
Louis widened his eyes as if shocked.
I do not think so. I know.
She slid her hand from his.
And I do hope any bags packed are for your return to Santa Coloma.
Aunt, you know I cannot attend the wedding.
You could if you cared more about the country than
my heart.
Regina's shoulders straightened.
Maybe we should discuss this after the concert.
Louis glanced again into the mirror, then strode to his violin case.
Yes, we can do that. I will give you a call from the plane.
You are leaving then?
Her eyes narrowed, and Louis looked away. He hated displeasing her. Always had. He walked to the door, his violin case in his grasp. Sergio moved ahead of him to open the door.
Louis,
his aunt's voice called after him. He paused his steps, but refused to turn.
Yes, aunt.
The silence expanded between them until she finally cleared her throat.
What are you playing tonight?
With the tight tone of Aunt Regina's voice, Louis knew he wouldn't play the light, uplifting song he'd prepared. To do so would deny the ache, building up like a wall of violent waves mounting in his chest. To do so would be to become what he most detested, unflustered, rigid, unemotional. The memory of his father's tearless face at his wife's funeral filled Louis's mind.
Why must we always stay strong?
He wanted to cry even as a boy. Aren't we real people, people who hurt, who face heartbreak? The castle could crumble around them, and Aunt Regina's face would display the same calm, unworried look, lest the people dare discover that the royals
were an actual family, filled with personalities and problems. Louis cleared his throat.
Tchaikovsky, violin concerto, second movement.
He turned, expecting to see the familiar flat expression. Instead, Aunt Regina's eyebrows peaked and then lowered.
Do you wish to make everyone weep? And what of those who play after you?
Shall I always think of others only?
Aunt Regina's gaze narrowed.
Must you wear your heart on your sleeve?
Then just as quickly, the anger disappeared. Instead, compassion filled her face, again surprising him. She stepped forward and touched his sleeve, offering a soft squeeze on his arm as she used to do when he was a boy. Had she ever been heartbroken and ridiculed for it? So little he knew of his aunt's life before she'd taken charge of him. Louis's shoulders softened, and his resolve started to slip. Sergio shuffled beside him, alerting Louis of the time and warning him against Regina's magnetic pull toward her wishes. He readjusted the handle of his violin case in his hand.
What good are emotions if one hides them? Would you rather have me like father?
He dared to whisper.
Of course not. But I can already imagine the headlines.
Since Louis loses at love yet again,
he interrupted, voice raised an octave.
I was thinking runaway prince,
she sighed, changing the topic from the music to his escape.
And where are you up to this time?
Do you have to ask?
Even as he said the words, the memory of the sun rising over the African savannah warmed him.
There are other places to tend a wounded heart. The beaches of the Riviera, perhaps? My friend, Lourdes, has a granddaughter.
And this is the problem. All the right women, with all the right credentials, have dozens of suitors. Why choose a prince from a small country like Aloria, when there are more eligible bachelors like Viscount Anthorpe Louis Spencer?
He's not even royal,
Aunt Regina scoffed, wrinkling her nose.
In this world, Aunt, the nephew of Princess Diana means more than the prince of a little-known place like Aloria. Is this why I need to go somewhere where no one knows me? Where people see me as me, and not as the crown?
And with that, Louis left the room, preparing to make the crowd weep with his song. Then, tonight at least, he would have a cry, alone. Chapter 2. Kibera Slums, Nairobi, Kenya. Olivia Garza held the child tighter to her chest as she followed the ebony-skinned guard who walked with authority ahead of her. It had taken some convincing to get Kyoko to lead her away from the others, but she refused to take a no. The thin, brown-skinned girl in her arms couldn't be any older than 3. It was into Olivia's arms that this girl's mother placed her before collapsing and breathing her last. Believing she could be the girl's mother wasn't realistic. Even though Olivia prided herself on thinking outside the box and working hard to make the impossible possible, this could never be. Who'd ever allow a single woman who balanced a part-time job in the inner city and co-produced a popular YouTube documentary series, in secret, to adopt a child internationally? Never mind that the mother had done very little mothering. Olivia had no idea what being a mother would look like, or even being a girlfriend. She'd made it her mission to let no man become anything closer than a friend. Relationships asked too much, and from what she'd seen, caused too much pain. And it's not like she had time for a relationship anyway. Most nights, back in Little Rock, she sat alone in her apartment, staring at the glowing screen of her laptop.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?